Mr. Yogi Meyer, Reel 4. Yes, you were talking about Kristallnacht. Yes.
In 1938, I lived in the Brandenburgische Straße off the Kurfürstendamm with my wife. Who was expecting our boy, our child? And I heard over the radio that a young man had entered the embassy in Paris and had shot one of the officials on guard. And this young man was called Greenspan, and he was Polish, but he had escaped already to France. I'm not bringing now the personal part. Generally, you will have a lot of that, for the Kristallnacht. I went down the road, down the street. When I came to the Kurfürstendamm, two girls stopped me, who were girlfriends of the people who lived with me before I had married and left the place in Kurfürstendamm. And they said to me, "Will you walk down with us the Kurfürstendamm?" And I said, "Are you mad? If we get caught, we don't need to explain to you what happened to me. And what happened to you is that you will have your ear cut off, and you will have a poster around your neck, which will say, 'Ich bin ein Schwein, schließe ich mit einem Juden ein, I'm a pig, and had relations with you.' But they said to me, 'You are colored. Now, when you are young, two very good looking girls who know very well say to you, you are colored, and they are willing to do something, you automatically will join them.' And we went down to Kurfürstendamm. And there was a synagogue in Fasanenstraße, which is just off Kurfürstendamm, burning. On one side was the police standing still, watching. On the other side was the fire service, also still, also watching. In the middle was the SA, but not in brown hem, but they had jackets over their army armed badges and so on. You only saw their brown boots, jack boots, that the guys are. And they were trying to keep the fire going, shifting wood and all that. With a large number of people standing there silently. And suddenly the flames went into the interior, and when they reached the most holy part of the synagogue where the Torah is in a special casing decorated, suddenly the flames jumped on those parchments and they started, including 10 commandments, "Thou shalt not kill." And two people next to them said at that moment, "Today is the synagogue, tomorrow it will be the kitchen." There was no spontaneous reaction from the whole population. They were silent, as silent as it would normally be when people watch a fire. Then we went, turned around, and walked down the Kurfürstendamm, and we saw a lot of windows of Jewish shops being broken, and SA standing in front to guard. And the windows were empty. They probably were guarding whilst their comrades went to the back entrance to clear it out. When I came home, my wife said, "I had a phone call from your brother, and I told him to go and stay with an uncle of mine outside. And I had a phone call from mother that father had been arrested." and Trondheim after they were down again, our housemaster came to me and said, "Mr. Mayor, there are two gentlemen there who were asking for you." I said, "Yes, I know." He said, "Look," I said, "you are never at home. You come in and come out." He said, "All right. We make you responsible that Mr. Mayor is at home tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. So I have no option. You have to be there tomorrow morning, as far as I know, in the house. But if you go down to the top floor, what we call Mansarde, there is a link with the neighbor house for emergency. Kind of metal door. It won't be locked. Right? That's all he said. And by 10:30 and so on, I went upstairs and left through the top of the house. And when he arrived at 11 o'clock, said, "Yes, I told him he must be upstairs because I've been watching that he doesn't leave the building." And when they were upstairs, I wasn't there. How he felt, I don't know. Then I saw other people arrested in the street. And now comes something which hasn't been told. I went to Otto Hirsch, who was the general secretary of the German Reichsvertretung, the German representation, where a lot of people on telephone went all the time. And as I was in my sports badge and so on, that was not anywhere. They didn't think I was Jewish or anything of that kind, or they thought Jewish people should look. And the Gretchen said, "Look, telephone calls, people have been killed, all this. Would you go to Leo Beek and tell him, because I knew all those very well, would he not consider to go to the English and the embassy, Christian embassy, so that we as head of German Jewry, if they are representative, maybe we can do or something." And then I went to Beek, and it was full of people again, really a kind of disaster atmosphere. He said, "I could not go. I could not go as head of German Jewry to take refuge at the German Belgium embassy. I could not do that. Thank you very much." And then the arrest started, and you know from other things what happened, really, which I did not know. I only know that my father-in-law, 3 weeks later, came back from the concentration camp because we had American affidavits, you know, a permission to enter with a number. And we let him out, never had the number. They did not know that this number would not come into operation for another 2 years. And then I asked him, "Can you," beginning with my wife, they all went to bed, said, "Can you tell me what happened?" He said, "No. I won't tell you a word, because if I tell you, and they know that you could only have known from me. Therefore, I will go back as we were threatened, and you will come with me. I can't tell you, and you would not tell me." Even in the evening, he said, "The moment you know, they may force it out of you." So, next day we had to go on a tent in my, a big saber which we had for my father-in-law, because he had served in the army and he had a big kind of sword, and that it was kept as a souvenir, and that had to be handed in as old weapons, Jewish hands. And then we heard that people were arrested and there would be a lot of money and so on. And then came where you had to hand in all your gold and silver and all that. That is well known to you. And then we heard about the Kinder transport and through personal connections in England. Actually, it was my stepmother who was in time in well, no connection otherwise, but she heard about me and so on. She approached somebody and said, "Would you not? You need it for the children." So anyhow, I got a permit. Then I went to the British Embassy And I showed it to the chap in charge there, one of the officers. He said, "Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. I came with your permission to enter England." He said, "Yes, but my wife and child, no, they can't come with you. Permission is for you only." I said, "That's impossible. We have booked already. The moment I got that letter, I booked my ship. We have to leave. We have the houses empty already, the flat. We will start packing it." "No, no, 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 no. That's all we can do." So then I came to my travel agency. They said, "No, no, go back again. Can you look for a man who will give a certain description? You might be lucky." And I went again. I got my permit for my wife, my child. And this man is very often mentioned, I don't know his name, that he on his own authority, against instructions, gave people permission.
He was in the embassy, was he?
Or he was at the embassy. The name is known now, but I didn't know it at the time. When we came home, we decided that it would call the firm to pack our boxes. And they came and started packing. And at the same time, we had to go to a certain public place where there was a row of tables. And you had to go along. And at the end, you would get what we called unbedenklichkeitsentschuldigung. Bescheinigung. There is no opposition or no reason why this person should not have permission to leave the country. But you had to pay your taxes in advance. You had to do all kinds of things. You had to have a hand in a list of all the things you wanted to take. And at the end, you had to also to pay your taxes for the Jewish community in advance. Because the Jewish community could only exist because every citizen of Germany had to pay a certain amount of tax to his affiliation to a religious organization. And if you didn't pay so, you had to declare it for the party of the state. So therefore people declared that they were Catholics, that they were Germans, so on and so on. In fact, in some cases of non-Jews, it's also you didn't want to support the party, you paid for the Catholic Church. Your purpose and so on. Anyhow, we paid for the Jewish community 1 year in advance. Then we got your Unbedenklichkeitsbescheinigung and you could go back. By then, we had, my car had sold a long time ago and we were bought sold furniture and so on, so we had some money in hand. And we couldn't take it out. So the chaps were packing. We knew about this firm, that they were very good packers, but people told us to be careful. So we had packing everything we showed on the list. And anything which was new, we had to pay double. So if I bought a new shirt, and if you want to emigrate, you don't take all things. Especially as we had the money from selling part of the things in for half price. So we paid double for what it was new. And then we had finished his boxes, he said to me, one of the workmen, "We are now going to have a drink. You understand? We are going to have a drink. We come back in an hour, and then at once we close the boxes, nail them down. Have you got it now? We go and have a drink, and we come back, and we will seal the boxes at once." But we knew from people that people had been found out afterwards to put things in the boxes, and they were getting from you a very good tip for that, and then they're getting another tip from the Gestapo. The last moment my wife decided that she couldn't get a packet of paper napkins for the baby into her suitcase. And she decided then, "Look, I put it in the boxes, only paper, instead of packing material." Boxes were sealed, we gave them a very handsome tip and they left. When we were in England, we were informed that our boxes had been opened and they found an item of medicine which were not on the list and everything was stopped. Bruder released and was born in Rotterdam. But that is, and now we went to Hamburg with our white pram with small wheels, completely different English pram. We're sitting under a poster, Juden unerwünscht, with great delight having our coffee. Then we went to the harbor, and we went by an American ship, Washington, and we went first class because, and to Southampton, not across, because for every day you spent on board ship, you got board money, and you were allowed to take this out. So we got, instead of one day, 2 days' money. And we worked, spent first class because you couldn't take money with you. So when we arrived there, the German officials were very correct, as they very often were, as I said before, especially those who worked there. There was a red carpet, a ship's company on both sides. And once you zoot, a nurse came to take the child to look after it. We had a lovely cabin, beautiful. When I, next morning we had breakfast, and I said to the waiter, I think I would like to try porridge. He said, porridge? Are you mad? And he was a typical Jewish waiter from Brooklyn, with flat feet, the way which you see all these sometimes in films. Amazing man. He said, look, I have caviar, anything you like. I said, look, I can't give you a tip. A tip? Who wants a tip from you? We only come here to take people out like you to England. In England we get proper passengers. They will tip us. But I would take money from you. So we arrived in England. And we stayed a friend of ours in Barnes, in the kitchen. But when we arrived in Victoria, we put our pram on top of the taxi, and then we drove. And I said, this is a long journey. They said it's not far from the station. When we arrived there, he charged us an enormous amount of money. I said, look, but, as you are new in England, I thought you might have a look at Buckingham Palace and so on, as the problem we were supposed to be. We stayed there, and a few days later we went to Hampstead, because Hampstead was then the center of all the Jewish refugees from Germany. There was always an international part, and we looked for accommodation, and I bumped into a girl in the street whom I knew from Germany, from the youth movement. And she was the niece of Einstein, Irina Einstein. And she said, I'm working with a family nearby, their name is Dave J, he is Douglas J, he works for a newspaper, and they're terribly nice people, very anxious to help people. I will ask Mrs. J whether she can take you in a few days just that you can look around in Hampstead instead of traveling to find something. And so we went, we stayed with the J's, and she was expecting babies, so we stayed there for 2 or 3 days. And then we found something in Steeds Road. Now, when we, at the same time, we had to report to Bow Street as aliens to get our alien registration book. We went there, and there was an elderly Bobby sitting behind the desk and said, oh, good morning, can I do for you? I said, look, we just arrived. Oh, yes, yes, we have lots of you. Now, can I have your papers, your passport? What is the child's name? I said, Israel. Yeah, that's your official name, Sarah. I know all about that. I said, no, our child is called Israel. I said, but why Israel only? He said, because there was a list of names in German, and we refused to take any of those names, which were names of undesirable people from the Bible, or words which had a very horrible sound in the German language. He said, you can't look for life and just call it Israel. It's a nice name, but don't you want to give him another name? I said, we always wanted to call him Thomas. We said we're in Germany, but if we are not in Germany anymore, we would call him Thomas. Ah, that's a nice name. Yes, look. Have you any documents? I said, no. I said, look, go to the Mills Church. Any baptized, Thomas will come back with a certificate. I said, no, you can't do that, we are Jewish. He said, oh, yes, you will have circumcision. All right, I called him Thomas. You couldn't believe it. Policemen without documents would do that on his own initiative. But he didn't. My son is still called Thomas Israel Meyer. If I just can go back to packing, I just remember we were only allowed a certain amount of forks, knives, and spoons per person. And as we had, like any, my wife, any young woman out of a good Jewish home, she had all her adornment and all the things, and so many knives and so on with the family. We had to leave this all behind, apart from two of this and two of that. And then I came to a napkin ring, where the chap said, he had a scale. I can't pack this for you, it's too heavy. There I lost my temper, and I went down and got a hacksaw, and I cut it off until it was the right way to take it. And we still got it here as a family souvenir issue. Anyhow, back to the policemen in England, and we settled them, and then a week later we decided that so many of our friends, now we celebrate being free. And we gave a party in Steele's Road, where we all arrived in dinner jacket, all ladies in evening gown, because we were told that if you go to England, you cannot go for dinner in the evening without a dinner jacket. And had in Germany still the opinion of England from the English upper classes that you go to dinner in your dinner jacket. And so we had a party. And then the war broke out. End of story. As far as that goes.
Yes, so the outbreak of war, how did that affect your situation?
We lived in Steele's Road, and I remember how my wife got the opportunity to be evacuated with a baby, and there they disappeared in the underground with the little cart boxes with the glass masks. And I stayed behind to help the people there to build fill sandbags. And 2 years later, I was called to help Dr. Wiener. Books had arrived from Holland for the Wiener Library at opposite the Wallace collection, and he wanted somebody he could trust to help with the boxes. And as I was physically very strong, so they thought, could I help out? So my job was to take the boxes when they came off the van and put them into the lift, and then it was taken upstairs and unpacked. There's some stories. One of the person who was in charge saw me reading the book, and he said to me, what are you reading? I said, Field Lexicon. He said, oh, I didn't know you can read. I said, only what I can have written myself, because I have bought my own copy of the Field Lexicon. And then the war broke out, and we decided to go to Norwich. No, we had. My wife came then, was evacuated. So my wife was evacuated to Bedford. And I joined her in Bedford, but she stayed with the chap in charge of the bus station. He first time saw English life, the Sunday joint, Monday cold, Tuesday next. The washing had to be out Monday. Who was first to have the washing out? The front room, where only the daughter was allowed to meet her boyfriend for a bit of courting, but it was the front room, something special. We all had the same plans, and an amazing world for us. We went then to Norwich, two friends of ours, and it was in Norwich that I had tried to, I was was unemployed, of course, and I tried to find a job. I went to the labor exchange, no good. And I said, could I join the army when I heard it was possible? And it took some time, it was cold in winter, and then suddenly the recruiting sergeant came on the middle of the road, knocked on the door with his stick, said, I am herewith ordered to report to the labor exchange. When I arrived at the labor exchange, there was a big poster. No vacancies, army. When I came in, there was a major who saw me and said, look, I have asked you to come in spite of no vacancies because I've got a vacancy for a sports teacher for the Royal Norfolk Artillery. And I would like to apply to the office for permission to recruit you. When I came a few days later, he said, I'm very sorry. I have been refused permission. The only thing you can do is to join the Pioneer Corps, the alien Pioneer Corps. I said, I'm not a pioneer. I'm very bad in science and technical things. No. That is only open to enemy aliens. And it's a kind of labor corps. You make a transfer afterwards. But I'm so pleased if you would join, because look, the riffraff I have down there, I can't find any of those in the army. But like, would you choose a part of the Bible? Here's a new and old testament. Oh yes, you want the Old Testament? I said yes. That any part you would like to, you have to swear an oath of allegiance to His Majesty the King on part of the Bible. I said, pardon? What would you like? Choose Jeremiah. Jeremiah was, and when I swore allegiance to the crown as a volunteer, I got 1 shilling, the king's shilling, and a railway warrant for my wife to go to London, and I had to go to Sandwich, where in the Richborough camp, 5,000 young men were waiting to emigrate to America until their number was coming up. And when I arrived late in the train and saw lots of soldiers walking along to that camp, I followed them with my little suitcase. When I arrived there, I reported that wanted to join the army, so I said, I have to report here. The sergeant took my papers and left, and the two people there, soldiers, and suddenly they caught me in the strongest Bavarian or some German dialect with each other. And then I knew I was at the right spot. And then I came then late to the dining hall, a chap who I knew from sport in Germany came running up, you are here, I said, yes. All of us are here. There's so many from the club are here. I will tell them all that you are here. What would you like to eat? I've never had so much food of a time. And then I joined in the army life, which was hilariously funny. Because there were young, educated men. Some had been probably in the German army already, but not so young, but middle-aged. And we went right through the training of a young recruit with marching, learning how to salute to the front, how to be smart. And I remember the commandant was Lord Reading, who was Jewish. And Lord Reading had always with him the so-called stick orderlies, which were very smart soldiers who marched behind him. Always 3 yards behind him, and then he turned around, you had double very fast, and again behind him, you see. And you were again used as a kind of messenger.